Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares stories of spiritual awakenings, spiritual communication, healing miracles, and ways to know your human and divine potential. Today I am most delighted to welcome Master Charles Cannon, who has been a guest on the show previously and rejoins us today to discuss his newest book, Living an Awakened Life, The Lessons of Love. Hello, Master Charles Cannon.
Hello, Cheryl.
And what a delight it is to once again chat with you and hear your laughter. Charles, as you know, listeners of Healing From Within are aware that my guests and I share experiences that help to open our minds and hearts to knowing life in a way that encompasses both our energetic and physical needs. As we are more than our physical bodies, understanding universal energy, quantum physics, gives us a multidimensional way to understand human and physical life and our expansive potential for manifesting and creating our best life. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Master Charles Cannon, who is a modern spiritual teacher and the founder of Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality, will discuss his high-tech meditation and holistic lifestyle experience. Charles, I always love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood and either a person, experience, or perhaps vision of what they thought life should be, and if they are living out that life today in the work and values they put out into the world. So think back to the boy you were and the man you have become.
Well, when I reflect on my youth, I always go back to being 3 or 4 years old and experiencing what I later understood to be the apparition of the Blessed Mother. And she would appear to me in the night during my sleep time, hovering over the end of my bed, and became my primary or foremost teacher. And I think the message that she continues to teach, or what the divine feminine archetype really represents in the modern world, is that we're here to learn how to love.
Beautifully
and that
said.
Has, that
and when you think about that, because I was aware of spirit around me as a child too, but sometimes I was frightened by it. Did you, when you were a child and you saw her or felt her in dreams or actually saw her, how did you feel?
Well, I was so young that it didn't frighten me. It was such a palpable, loving, motherly, nurturing kind of a feeling that accompanied the apparition that it was just very soothing and natural. And so, of course, I eventually asked my mother about it, and my mother was kind of a devotee of the Blessed Mother, and just was very positive about it with me and said, oh, you know, that's so wonderful, you're so special, that's a very beautiful experience, and just keep enjoying it and being open to it and share it, continue to share it with me as it happens.
And I advise our listeners out there, parents who have children who may come to them and express what they're seeing or sensing in their dreams or quietness, to embrace it, because we are very much more than the physical body, and the spiritual teachers and souls of our loved ones are around us, and the children are sensitive enough to pick it up and to be as you were, feel comfortable. I know many parents might say, well, that's just imagination. You know, I would hope that they could see their way, even if they don't understand it, to saying, if you're comfortable with it, it's good with me. Something to that effect. All right, let's go on to the previous book you wrote, which was amazing, and we talked about it before, I just want to catch our listeners up on it. Forgiving the Unforgivable, which chronicles the true story of the survival of a very small group of meditators demonstrating awakened living in the 2008 Mumbai terrorist attack and what followed after that. Because some of what we're talking about here today began in that story. Please tell us how that experience and resolution, how that resolution is very pertinent to the divide we are feeling right now in this country and a world dealing with problems that seem almost impossible to find a way past.
The resolution of the terrorist experience for us was that we were able to be compassionate and forgiving and loving and kind and in response to the terrorists. And that message went out over the international media all over the world, and thousands of people contacted us saying that we had inspired them. And how could they learn to be the way we were, or how did we get to be the way we were?
Yes.
And that necessitated that we share our experience with a greater audience, and that's why I wrote the book, Forgiving the Unforgivable. It was to those people to answer that question. And in the epilogue of the book, I said very clearly what I just said to you, which is that when we come to the bottom line of it all, we're really here to learn how to love.
Yes.
And that love is the language of truth, and we have to learn how to speak that language and live that truth ever more consistently and constantly in our lives and in our interactions with each other.
In other words, no vengeance, no anger, no negativity. Going forward, trusting that all is as it must be and embracing it. So you just answered the second part of that question, was the divide we're feeling right now in the country after the election and in the world due to so much trauma and terrorism. You just answered it perfectly. We have to draw from our heart and from our essence forgiveness and love, and everything else has to be not embraced, embraced, not honored, not focused on.
Yes, absolutely correct, because in truth, love is the very nature of the life energy that empowers us.
Absolutely.
Life in and of itself is a loving, benevolent, peaceful energy. It is a joyful, celebratory energy. And when we are able to be awake to that and to move out of the limitations of our minds and our stories about who we are and what life is, and stay in touch with that essence of life, loving life, benevolent life that we all share, then we have a more truthful and harmonious experience of life as human beings in the 21st century.
Excellent. Beautifully said. What might be some spiritual remedies for 21st century social problems? You are describing it, but we're going to go a little further. I know you wrote about American philosopher David Abram, and I kind of liked what you said about him, and also the traditional Native American prayer, which is, give us the wisdom to teach our children in love, to respect and be kind to one another, so that we may grow with peace in mind. So this, again, is echoed through tradition, through different cultures, through different races, and through different philosophers. So tell us something more about that.
Well, yes, it's true that love and peace and joy are the very nature of life, of the consciousness that we all share. And yet, in human experience, it gets veiled, it gets contracted in our awareness, and we lose sight of it. We lose the awareness of it because we become imbalanced or more fragmented within the relative construct of all experience, and thus the illusory, the life negative, the fear-based polarity becomes the default dominant. And all masters have taught that the balance principle is the gateway to wholeness and truth. So in order to create balance, we have to emphasize the opposite polarity of illusion, which is truth, or the opposite polarity of fear, which is love, or the opposite polarity of the negation of life, which is the affirmation of life. And learning to live with balance in an imbalanced world then opens that gateway to wholeness and truth, wherein we can experience the one love, the one life, the one blissful consciousness that we all share, and live in a more trans-egoic experience of life on this planet and interactively with each other.
And you also wrote in your book, to begin a more noble chapter in human history, we begin with a respect for life. In fact, that's a clue about love's true nature. It's accepting and inclusive. Now, in my book, The Living Spirit, I address that idea in a little different way, but I wrote that the people, to truly discover who they are, must know they are spiritual beings. And I wrote, we all can walk in the world of spirit and at the same time have a foot touching the ground of this world. This can be done by recognizing the gifts and blessings of life, and your life in particular. All great masters, Saint Francis of Assisi, Jesus, Moses, the Buddha, and others have learned to quiet the drives and cravings of the physical body long enough to free the mind. In doing so, they were able to awaken to inner peace and to messages being given to them from spirit. Through this connection, they learned how to improve the quality of their daily lives, as well as how to engage others with empathy, love, compassion, and kindness. So, Charles, in light of the negative aspects of the presidential election process this year, how are we going to teach people to dance with love as the way to peace and for our troubled nation?
Well, again, I think it's the responsibility of every human being to be responsible for their experience of life. And we are the creators of our experience, and we have to own that. So if we tell stories and project our illusory thoughts and beliefs about what's happening, the happenings of life, the happenings of consciousness, then we're responsible for how we are creating our experience through that projection. And therefore, we need to be more present, more wakeful in each moment to the creation we are creating. Ultimately, I think great masters would say, endeavor to be as much a detached observer, a witness of the happenings of life as you can be, and stay firm in the truth of who you are, and let that truth and its vibration be your contribution to the world around you. And yet that's very challenging for most people who are so identified with their minds and their stories. But nevertheless, I think it's important that in an experience like this election, that it's really a call to awakening. It's a call to greater wakefulness, which then results in greater love and tolerance and harmony and cooperation.
That's exactly what is happening and will continue to happen, this awakening. We can be aligned to this energy of love and compassion in the universe, and it feels good. It just feels It feels right. I mean, you smile, you giggle, you chuckle, you're amused when you're an observer, and you let go of all that judgment and needing to be right and perfect, because we are not or never will be perfect in this physical realm. We are only learning to reconnect again to this alignment, to this divine energy. That's why you and I chuckle a lot, I guess.
Absolutely.
And it feels so wonderful, better than having a scowl on our face and being angry. All right, let's go
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's go on to something else. Please, Charles, tell us how your new book, Living an Awakened Life, is arranged, and the best way for readers to take advantage of the grace of epiphanies that are discussed throughout the book.
The book is arranged in a very organized and focused way through the four seasons of the year, so that you can read one day at a time and have a truthfully inspired or wakefully inspired focus for that day that you can then apply. There's an actionable at the end of each day's presentation. And you can then explore the experience that is written about and make it an experience for you rather than just a concept. And I've always been very emphatic about that. I feel that there's way too much what I call intellectual enlightenment in the world and not enough experiential enlightenment.
Yes.
And that the more we can experience our concept and make it alive through our experience, the more truthful we are and the more fulfilling experience of life we have.
Well, I love the way that you use the seasons and your descriptions of the seasons. Like, for example, for winter, you wrote, winter heralds the coming triumph of truth over illusion and is a time for self-love. It's all here in the dark, an abused childhood, growing up with demons, being shamed for our bodies and for not living up to our potential in work and in life, and memories of failures and dashed dreams. We are not alone in our self-negation. Everyone has their own unique issues about self-worth, self-acceptance, self-love. Our first step into freedom is to rise above that quagmire and to the causative love level of love. You are alive. Loving this, the experience of life itself, makes it possible to open to source. So we come back to similar threads throughout our discovery of awakening, that loving life and getting to know ourself as a soul, interconnected to everybody else and everything else in the universe, is a very strong prerequisite to really fulfilling our potential and our destiny to find love. And you also described love very beautifully somewhere else. You are about to discover a fundamentally different definition and articulation of love. So tell us a little bit about what love is. Many people think it's romantic. It's, you know, between children and parents. It's your job. You love your job. You know, they focus it on such specific ideas, but it's really much, much more. So tell us something about that.
The best definition I ever heard of love was from a great master who was my teacher, and that was Baba Muktananda. And he said that love is the experience of no other. Now, when you contemplate that, it's very powerful, because we always think that love is in relation to another.
Yes.
But in truth, love is the experience of no other. That means love is the experience of oneness, in which there is only one. And what is that one? Well, it's been called by many names. You can call it source. You can call it God. You can call it consciousness. Or very simply, you can call it life. And life is the bottom line. It's the ground of being, the substratum that we all share. And we are learning how to evolve our value for the life we all share and to make it sacred value. And when we do, then we can understand the very nature of life as love. And the fact that we are alive and all and everything that we encounter is the same life, the same love. So the experience of love then is simply being consistently loving.
Yes,
it's not about seeking it outside of yourself and finding it somewhere outside of yourself. It's recognizing you already have it. As you mentioned, one of my favorite mystics, which was St. Francis, who said, Francis, what you're looking for is what is looking. You are the love that you seek. Bring it forth. The only love we ever experience is the love we bring.
That we give out into the world. Just, you also wrote it this way. In the end, it comes down to this. You are the love you have been seeking. You can look at your reflection in the mirror and say, I am living love. The authentic measure then is realness. So again, it comes down to truth. When you find this truth, it's you. It's part of you. It was always you. It will always be you. And no one can give it to you. You have to find it in the experience. That's exactly what you said. Now, my sister passed this year. And I tried very much to help her through her long illness to have some concept of this. But it was very hard for her. But I did a reading with her. Not too long ago, I connected with her soul energy, and she let me know, she expressed what she became aware of when in spirit, and this will be in my next book, New Love. She said, she sort of expressed to me that she hadn't known how to pull all the compassionate, loving threads of life together with enough appreciation. Because, like many of us, she always thought she had more time. So for our listeners today out there, I want you to know, in this moment is everything. And you must be the love and have the love and share the love. And prepare yourself for when you leave this place, it will be easier for you to transition. If you are comfortable in love and you are happy and you're joyful rather than angry and vindictive and uncomfortable. So that's what my sister shared with me, and I thought it appropriate to just say that, because that's what we're talking about. That's what we're very much involved in, that we wish our listeners and readers to understand. Yes, in every moment is the opportunity for goodness and love.
And that's what wakefulness is. It's living fully alive, fully present, in each moment and aware of the truth of one love and one life that inspires us, empowers us, and empowers all and everything through 50 billion simultaneous universes that we know of.
Yes. Now, with all your formal training, a lifetime of training, you have seemingly abandoned the traditional context of spirituality in favor of a modern approach. Can you tell us about that new way?
Modern approach is modern spirituality. And to me, the truth of life is always here and now. It's not about yesterday. We don't live yesterday. I often say we don't breathe yesterday. We don't live tomorrow. We breathe and live here and now. And our spirituality, the way we interact with spirit, has to be relevant to the times in which we live. And so if you look through the history of humanity, there have always been updates to wisdom traditions, updates to great philosophical systems, and there have been always masters who have presented themselves and supplied us with those updates that make the time-honored truth relevant to the times in which we live. And that, to me, is what modern spirituality is really about. It has to do with the times in which we live so that we can relate to the truth in a current and modern way that is relevant to our personal experience here and now.
Well said, and that is what we need to remember. We cannot live in the past. We must live now, and we must manifest and create the world that's right for us individually and collectively. And for the times we're living in, and we're trying to do that. And history and experience and spirit is giving us the experiences at this present moment to do just that, to awaken and to go beyond where we were yesterday and go into the future with great hope, compassion, and love within us. So I want to thank you, Master Charles Cannon, for sharing your inspirational thoughts and visions for a 21st century way to recognize and utilize the wisdom of our universal connection to life and love eternally. To purchase Living an Awakened Life, go to synchronicity.org. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, Master Charles Cannon has, through a series of exploring our inner world, given us a look at the really important questions that, when addressed and given consideration, or offer us a view of our inner soul life and the means to improving and enriching our personal, physical, and spiritual life. We have discussed meditation, which many busy people see as a luxury that they just can't afford. But we do have a choice as to what we engage in or move away from. And as a part of our awakening process, meditation is not a chore, but a gift we give ourselves. Master Cannon said it in this way: while it may have become habitual to feel overwhelmed by the busyness of 21st century life, we do have a choice about what we direct our attention and how we spend our time. We all make time for pleasure and for activities we desire. If meditation is a duty, you won't do it for long. If meditation is something you should want to do and try, you will fail. Real meditation is the fulfillment of an internal process, satisfying a hunger for connection with Source that compels a person to interrupt their involvement with the world and go within. Why? To be fed. So this is the real point of meditation, to strip away the distractions and go to the Source and find love. Charles and I would have you discover the greatest truth of your being. We are born to remember the magnificence and power of our divine connection to eternal life and to creation, and to know the universe within us, that we are part of it and it is part of us. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and invite you to my website, CherylGlick.com, to listen to authors and guides in the metaphysical field who share their journeys and an exploration of our multidimensional energies. Shows may also be heard on webtalkradio.net and dreamvision7radio.com. Thank you.